this episode of Future of Foods Interviews, I talked to Roman Kriz, CEO of Bene Meat, a Czech-based company which is cultivating hamster cells to make meat for pet food. Listen now to find out why they chose hamster cells and also how they're making use of a legal loophole to produce and sell in Europe. Bene Meat are ambitious and will be trialling meat for human consumption next year. This isn't hamster. I'm Alex Crisp and welcome to another episode of Future of Foods Interviews. This episode is supported by Career Concept Limited, recognised in the industry for matching technical and IT talent to positive action initiatives and startups across the novel food sector. You can listen to this and other episodes for free on all podcast providers and on Substack. Please like and subscribe. So thank you, Roman Kriz, for coming on to Future Foods Interviews podcast. Roman Kriz is CEO and founder of Bene Meat, which is a cultivated pet food company based in Prague. And we met last week in Amsterdam, or a couple of weeks ago now. And it's very nice of you to come on the show, Roman. So can you just quickly introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about Bene Meat and about the products that you are making there?
Okay, you introduced me already. Thank you very much for the invitation. Bene Meat was set up in 2020. We are in cultivated meat. We are not a pet food company. We are also, you know, like oriented on human food because our cells are suitable for both for humans and for pets. So that's it. Probably, I do not know what we would need more.
Well, I mean, what drew you to this area, I suppose? What drew you into sort of cultivated meat? How did you get involved?
Well, it was just accident or, you know, like just maybe fortune because I was working for BTL, which is our mother company. You know, we are a subsidiary of BTL, which is a producer of medical stuff. And I was looking for the technologies which were invented or, you know, like were tested, you know, in the academic sphere and would have some potential to be introduced to the market because BTL is very good in development, you know, production, certification, and sales. But they do not have so much, so big base. In research. So that was what I was doing. And during the discussion, one discussion in 2019 with the owner of BTL, he also mentioned, you know, or like a side effect, you know, he mentioned, have a look also at the artificial meat because, you know, at the Singularity University, it was 2019, at the Singularity University, they said that it's a good thing. It's a perspective direction, you know, like look whether there is nothing, whether there is anything interesting and like potentially for us, because BTL is always interested in technologies because there is a philosophy that technology solves problems. So that's the reason, you know, like how I got introduced, because, you know, like I noticed that the owner of BTL was thinking that the artificial meat, you know, is the plant meat. I haven't heard about that up to that time. I consulted that with Uncle Google. Uncle Google told me what is plant meat. I was looking at that. It didn't make too much sense to me, you know, like nutritionally wise. But Uncle Google told me also that there is also cultivated meat, you know, like as animal origin. And that was the reason, you know, like why I started to be interested in that, because it made it was making quite sense to me, because it
Okay.
was, you know, like nutritionally, you know, like not so many companies, very difficult, you know, so that was a challenge for me.
Okay, what was your role before then at PTL before you got involved in this?
I was something like technological scout or something like that. And
Okay.
for almost 20 years, I was representing BTL in Ukrainian market. So,
Okay.
yeah.
So, do you have a science background or is it more business, would you say?
No, no, no. I'm by education, I'm a lawyer, and for my whole life, I was in international trading. But, you know, like I'm interested in interesting things. So it's also like not only law and trading, but also economy and
So you're good at
recently also
spotting,
science.
and so you're good at spotting a good opportunity, perhaps.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know yet.
So at I mean at Ben A. Meat, publicly at least, it seems like you are focused on pet food, but you've said it's not just pet food. So what was it that kind of drove this early kind of venture into pet food rather than human cultivated food feed?
I think there were three reasons. You know, the first was the regulatory issues, because it's a little bit easier. The regulatory pathway is a little bit easier with the pet food than with the human food, at least in Europe. Second reason was that, how to say that, you know, cultivated meat, you know, last 5, 6 years or something like that. Once it was presented, you know, in public, it was for rich, curious people. You know, it costs fortune, and it doesn't have to be like that. And we think that the potential is like that. And I thought that it's a good sign for the consumers that the potential of the cultivated meat is also in the field where the basic raw materials are several times lower, because for the pets usually, or in bulk market, you know, like pets are fed by something what is so terrible that even the cheapest possible, you know, stuff, you know, like cannot be consumed by people. And the third was the fact that we wanted to, because we thought that it will be quite difficult to convince people to taste something so new. But, you know, with the animals, it's a little bit easier, because, you know, like you can, how to say that, you can convince people with rational arguments or with marketing to eat something that it's good or something like that. It's pretty hard with the dogs or with the cats.
Yeah.
You know, like they are much more close to the nature, so they eat what, you know, what's good for them, or at least what, you know, like in long term, you know, they do not eat what is not good, what is nutritionally not worth, or something like that.
And
so
so they,
that's that yeah
yeah so and so they eat more instinctively, you mean? So they just
yeah
kind of eat
yeah
what they are told, you know, what their body tells them they should eat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, so you have chosen a cell line there for the pet food that is quite interesting. Now in Peru, I tried guinea. Well, actually, no, I didn't try guinea pig, but I saw guinea pig on people's plates, and you've sort of chosen a similar cell line for your pet food products, right?
Yeah, we chose hamster because it's a natural prey, and there is a less risk of allergic reactions of the pets, because, you know, their bodies are, you know, by evolution, deducted to consume the rodents.
Okay, that's interesting. So it's kind of hamsters, I suppose rats would be kind of similar, would they, in that, but.
Yeah, like I think that this is something. I know that it's kind of emotional, but from biological point of view, the cells, from different animals do not differ so much, because the cell basically, the mammalian cells or animal cells have the same or very similar mechanisms how to epigenetically adjust to the conditions, so that's the reason why, the cell which you have in your eye or in your bones or in your muscles, they have the same DNA, but they are epigenetically adjusted to the role in the body which they play. And once you develop the cell or adjust the cell to the conditions in the bioreactor, then they use epigenetical means that make them almost equal, regardless, which kind of animal or which kind of a tissue was the origin of the cells.
Right. I mean,
So the cells, I do not say that they are exactly the same, of course not, but the differences are much smaller than between the animals themselves.
okay. So, I'm not a scientist, but that sounds like kind of genetic editing. Is that?
No, it's not. It's not because the difference between genetics and epigenetics is that the cell has the same DNA, so the same genome, but the different genes are switched on or switched off, during the process of phosphorylation or methylation or acetylation. So that's the reason, what makes the difference between the cells, between the types of the cells in the body.
Okay.
So, the DNA is the same, like as I said, in your body, the difference between the DNA of the cell in the bone or in the muscle is zero. They
Okay.
are just, different mechanisms in the cells are switched on or switched off.
Right. So, do you have a product available now that's is being kind of sold into the market or not?
Not yet, because we are right now we what we produce is the, let's say, pilot industrial scale, so the amounts are not so big, because the amounts of the meat which are consumed by on the market, regardless whether by pets or by humans, are so big that one production line or scale or something like that cannot make a product or product line. So already for 2.5 years or something like that, what we produce we use for testing, for analysis, for product development, etc. So that's the reason why we do not have still enough raw material so that we have the final product on the market. The only difference, or the only step towards that, is that after testing the final products, on our dogs and our cats, in the office, because we have something like more than 140 people in the team, not only in the office. So we created a program which is called Try and Share, and that's for the participants, for the people in European Union which would like to test it on their dogs. That's dog treats, and we would like to create a community of the testers and early adopters. And we are just offering that to the market, you know, in this way, because it doesn't make sense to make any business of that. But it's already a step towards objectifying the customer's demand, and we are getting the feedback from the participants, etc., because you know, like for any producer, it's quite important, you know, like, will the people eat it? Will the pets eat it? And, you know, like, we are trying to give, of course, limited, but some objective answer.
So you have tested it. You have tested the product with dogs and they like it.
Yeah, and with the cats as well. You know, like, for instance, you know, like, one of the, I mentioned that during these last two and a half years, we were you know, testing. So, you know, for instance, we have one test in Belgium at the university in Ghent, you know, like which was comparing the complete cat feed, you know, like comparing the chicken breast and our hamster cells, and you know, the we were looking for the level of digestion of the nutritions. And it was, you know, like 1-to-1, so it was quite positive, and it was not like non-professional. It was really, you know, like measuring the feces and, you know, like all the parameters in both groups of the animals.
Okay. So how soon do you think you will have a product available?
Well, I think that next year there will be a cultivated product on the market. I know that, you know, these promises are very common in the field of cultivated meat. It's almost like controlled nuclear fusion, you know, when already for 50 or 60 years we hear that, yes, within 4 years, it will be available. But I'm really optimistic, and you know, like you remember, you know, like something like 1 year ago or 1.5 years ago, you asked me for the interview. You know, like I was too busy, and the second is that you know, in our company we act according to how to say that, you know, in English, put up or shut up. So, you know, like, I do not want to, you know, wave hands and, you know, promise something unrealistic and trying to attract the investors. So that's the reason.
At that I remember at that time, the reason I contacted you was because there was news about how Benimeat had approval in Europe to make and sell cultivated dog food. So, I mean, can you kind of talk us through a little bit about that regulatory approval? How complex was the process, and what level of approval do you have exactly? What can you do?
It's it was long story because, you know, as the cultivated meat is a little bit ahead of the regulatory rules, then you know, at the beginning of 2023, when we had the first samples available and, you know, like small production, you know, in lab scale, we started to look for the possibilities how to register it, certify or something like that, so that, you know, like we would have the proof that it's possible to sell it. So first, you know, like we found out that basically there is a gap in the legislation. So, you know, like, because we are not exactly in the field of, or we are not in the category for so-called animal byproducts, which means the rests of the bodies, you know, which are not, dedicated to the people, human consumption. So, you know, like we found out that the best definition would be a product of fermentation, because, you know, that's, you know, evaluation of the risks, etc., you know, complies with the process. And in fact, you know, during the cultivation, the cell is has a characteristics which is really close to microorganism, which is usually fermented. So we, because, we went to the state authorities. They said we have no idea, so we went to consult that with the European Commission. European Commission said, okay, yeah, that seems logic. So we got the, the statement from European Commission. So then, we went to the state authorities. They said, okay, if European Commission said A, then we will do A. So, that's the reason why we use the pathway to register our product as a product of fermentation. Now there are discussions, that it should anyway be animal byproduct. So, but that's that's more technical issues,
So it's a loophole, perhaps, in the law which you found, but do you think they're going to try and close that loophole then?
I don't think so, or I don't know why,
Right.
because there is basically no reason, the product is safe and, it's produced according to HACCP. So,
Yeah.
what would it be the reason? But, we don't care, we are really sure that the product is safe and it's suitable for the both consumers, pets and humans. So,
But you don't have, a kind of letter from EFSA or I mean, I suppose EFSA isn't involved in this at all, are they? No.
no. We asked EFSA and they said, sorry, we are involved only in human food, in novel food.
Okay. But do you have a letter from anyone saying we agree this is safe for animals to eat?
Well, we have the, we have the, all the formalities in the pet food are being done on the level of state authority. So Czech state organs, it's a department under Ministry of Agriculture, which is supervising the safety of feed.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have the paper.
Because I mean, there's companies like Meatly in the UK. They have DEFRA approval, I think, for their product. I mean, I might be wrong, but that's what I think they were involved. And I wonder whether Meatly are looking at kind of trying a similar thing to you in Europe. I mean, are you aware of anything like that? You know, kind of competition coming in and using your loophole that you found.
Well, I know there is one Austrian company which used very similar way. Just they just are in different category. We are in category 12, and they are in category 13 or something like that. Meatly basically use the same pathway in UK with some differences because UK considers cultivated meat to be animal byproduct. So now we we are in the feed register of the of UK, but we should solve the ABP problem, or ABP issue
Yeah.
as well, but that's again technical. And to be honest, I'm not so much afraid about the competitors or something
Yeah.
like that because the market is so huge that it's vice versa. I think that for the consumers, it's crucial that it will not be only one company because all the other competitors are welcome to use the pathway and we are happy to have more competitors.
Yeah. Okay. So with your trials, with the dogs, how have your trials taken place? Have they been, have they been kind of offered your product versus regular kind of pet food or how's that,
Yeah,
how
there was that there were several kinds of testing. There are two bowls tests, I guess, where you offer the something standard and cultivated, or you test some long-term consumption, etc. We have a special thematic group which is involved in testing and product development, so that was organized by them and Yeah, we have also, long-term, feeding trial, on mice, for 3 months, the mice were fed by, standard food and or standard feed and cultivated feed. And, again, the result is positive. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Because there's
And,
been some.
at the end of the day, I think that, it will be the decision of the pet owners, whether it's suitable or not, and we respect it.
Yeah. I mean, when you when the product goes to market in regard to labeling, are you going to label it hamster flavor, or are you going to sort of keep that a bit more vague?
No, we are obliged to use the formulation which is in the official documentation. So we will use the cultivated cells of mammalian origin, and because you're asking probably because of the transparency, so that the people know what they eat or what their pets eat. In the Q&As, of Try and Share program, there is a hamster mentioned. So, I think that we are quite transparent. The reason why we registered the product or the raw material as the cultivated cells of mammalian origin was mainly not to first inspire the competitors, and second, there were still quite a lot of intellectual property rights, which were still not formulated in patent applications. So, we didn't want to create so-called prior art, so that we could not patent it.
Yeah. So I wonder, because you're based in Prague, aren't you? So I wonder whether it's the same, because here in Europe, here in the UK, people have hamsters as pets. So I mean, it used to be quite common when I was a kid to have a hamster as a pet. I wonder whether they do there. I mean, have you got pet hamsters in Czech, in the Czech Republic?
Yeah, we do as well. Yes, we
Okay.
have also, people which have, pigs as a pet,
Yeah.
some special pigs, of small size, not the big ones.
Yeah. So is there
So,
going to be any kind of cultural issues then having hamster flavored pet food, you don't think?
I don't think so, because, there is no reason for that.
No. Okay. And because I suppose because you are a subsidiary of a much larger company, you have good access to resources. So kind of money wise, you can keep going in kind of developing this.
We have money available until it makes sense what we do.
Okay. So, I mean, what's your runway, I suppose, kind of financially? How long have you got before you need to sort of make this work?
If it makes sense, then originally I said that, from the beginning I'm saying that, there are just two conditions, for us. First is that it has to be, it has to be, doable, so that, the cultivated meat has to be creatable, or how to say that, you have to,
Yeah.
it must be possible to
It's be
produce it. And
feasible.
second, and second, yeah, and second, sorry for my English,
No, it's fine. It's
and
fine.
second. And second, we have to be the best in the world. And once these two conditions will be fulfilled, then we do not have a problem.
You have to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
Okay. At this particular product, you mean you need to have the best in the world.
No, in cultivated meat.
Okay. Is that your ambition?
Sure.
Okay. So like in the next 3 to 5 years, you're kind of hoping to be what? I mean, where do you see yourself in 5 years then as a cultivated meat company?
It really depends on the market, on the, like from the producers, like market acceptance, et cetera, et cetera. We are right now on the pathway, and like we need to do everything like we if we went to the market with our final product. But like we as our biggest added value is that we know what we are doing and why. And we are not, like our competence is not so much in production, marketing, sales, etc. So, like we do not want to, we do not want to go this way, unless, or we have to go that way until, there will be another partners, producers, marketers, salespeople, etc. Like we have certain position on the market already, which will replace us. But like it has to be done anyway by us because the producers are not ever, about how to position the product, how to present it, how to what the whole argumentation, et cetera, is out of the competence of out of the current competence of the producers, marketers, and sales.
Yeah. So I suppose
So,
because
but generally, sorry, maybe I will add what we would like to be, and where is our biggest competence is to deliver the technology, the know-how to the producers, because we do not have the ambitions to be, I don't know, producer number 2000 on the market, because it doesn't make sense. If we want to get the cultivated wheat to the market in bigger volumes, and the volumes have to be big, otherwise it will be really, like
niche.
unremarkable, let's say level niche.
Yeah.
Then there is a lot of factories which have to be built, because just just for your imagination, like because meat makes something like 3% of GDP worldwide, so that's something like. I guess I was counting that something like $3 trillion. It's the same like automotive. So if you look at the statistics, then the meat consumption rises worldwide something like 1% each year, just to cover just the rise of the volumes. Like if let's say the minimum factory production facility would produce something like 10 tons a day, which is something like incredible now for the biologists, for instance. Then you would have to build, you would have to be able to build something like 1,000 these factories a year just to cover the rise of the volumes.
Yeah.
So and like once the whole industry is not ready for that, because like right now, almost all the equipment is. I'm not speaking about the, let's say, laboratory volumes or laboratory equipment, but for the production lines, like everything is a prototype. And prototype means, that it's not ideal, it's too expensive, like too long for the delivery, et cetera, et cetera. So we need to standardize it, like, and to make like a standard product of that.
And do you think it's important for you to be first to market with this product?
No,
No.
we have to be the best.
The
We
best.
don't have to be the first.
And when you come to market, you need to be able to produce the kind of required amounts straight away, you think?
No, it will not work like that, because it's a little bit like chicken and egg, because like in order like if you want to produce reasonable volumes, then you need to have the market, and you cannot get the market without producing the reasonable volumes. So it will go step by step. I think that it will go from the first production facility, second, then maybe like if the marketers, if the producers, because we are in negotiations, of course, with some producers. Once they will make a lot of profit on that, because it will be required by the customers, and the customers will pay for that, for the quality, for ethics, for safety, sustainability, or whatever. Mm. Then, you know, like I think that, you know, like the other producers will be attracted as well.
So when your product comes to market, what percentage of cultivated meat do you envision being in that product?
I think that it really depends, because, you know, like, let's divide it into three segments. The first is dogs. Second is cats. Third are humans. I think that with the dogs, and again, you know, like for dogs and for cats, you know, like the difference is whether it's only treats or whether it's complete nutrition, because there are some regulations and certain rules about the ingredients, you know, like which it has to which have to be involved. I think that for the dogs it will be easier, because dogs are, you know, like they eat almost everything, and there are even vegan dogs, you know, for instance. Yeah. With the cats, you know, like it will be so for instance, you know, like I know that Meatly, you know, like came to the market, you know, like with the first sales, you know, they had something like 4%. We have 18% for the dogs, you know, like just for the trial, you know, like with the cats, you know, like it cannot go below 30-50% for the human consumption. You know, like we count on, or we have the vision of the hybrid product, like 50-50.
Yeah,
you know, like with the plant ingredients or with the other ingredients.
Okay, so with the dog treats, sort of 18%, and so that's with dog meat, or is that kind of a dog treat? Would that be?
That's dog treats. You know, the try and share program right now. The first, you know, like the first step. You know, the it's, I don't know, treats or kibbles. You know, like. They consist of 18% of the cells.
Okay, so you've been experimenting with different percentages to see how, you know, how much the dog likes it at what percentage, and you've kind of reached 18% as a good amount. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then with cats, it's more like 30%. You've been doing these trials, and it got to 30% until they were interested, and kind of anything below that, they just didn't care. Is that how it worked?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, because, you know, there is you know, especially with the cats, because they are like ultimate carnivores, because they do not have the digestion, you know, system adjusted to eat anything but meat. So, you know, like there is a percentage, you know, like you know, like. If we come to the market with the product, you know, like, or with any product, and not only us, but anybody, you know, like, there is, if it is not supposed to be some, like, marketing scam, or how to say that, you know, like, show, or how to say that, you know, it has to be perfect product. You know, it has to be really, you know, the acceptance of the cats, or of the dogs, you know, has to be on the high level, so that, you know, like it makes sense not only for the pet owner, but for the animal as well.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why we were testing, you know, like with cats and dogs, you know, like different levels, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, like with the cats, for instance, it's almost impossible to reach 100%, because, you know, like even if they get mice, you know, then some of them, you know, do not like it. So. Yeah. So you know, like we are looking for acceptance above 80 or 85%, I guess.
Okay, so there is a risk that someone could buy the food and then their cat wouldn't eat it, I suppose. But then you get that with cats anyway. I've had cats where they just refuse to eat certain foods. It's quite normal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's normal, and you know, even with the dogs, you know, like with the standard products, you know, like they prefer some. They do not like too much, you know, the other one.
Yeah.
You know, like nobody knows, because, you know, to be honest, we do not know too much, you know, like what we are eating or what our with our pets, are eating.
Yeah.
Because, the how to say that the equilibrium stick, or how to say that the game around the labeling, et cetera, is so sophisticated that at the end of the day, you do not have a clue what you're eating.
Yes, well, that's true. Yeah. Okay, well, just a final question before I let you go, Roman. I mean, what do you think are the biggest problems kind of facing the specifically the kind of cultivated meat for pets? I mean, what are the uncertainties that keep you up at night?
Well, I will not speak about the, the issues in the, building the facility and development, et cetera, because we would stay here for a few hours, I'm
Yeah.
afraid. I think that the biggest risk, is the too much support from the state. I think that this is the biggest risk because recently, how to say that, people are a little bit even deterred by the, or I feel that people are deterred by the so much promotion of the alternative proteins, like Big Future, novel food, et cetera, cultivated meat, plant meat, like that sometimes, it goes beyond the borderline, where people, start to be, like saying, okay, why, like why they're pushing so much. So I think that, the biggest risk is that the whole industry, activists, NGOs, like people which are involved will be too pushy and will be, like requiring by the state to support it too much.
So,
So for instance, in Denmark, like they are preparing the CO2 tax on the cows, for instance. I do not think that it's a good way. I think that people should have the right to choose and should define their reasons for their choose, and like cultivated meat should be like an next option, not like a replacement of the meat. It should be considered like that, and in practice it will be like that for many years.
yeah, well, I mean, it's probably only going to work as a hybrid for a long time, right? As a product.
No, I think that within a few years we will be below price parity with the normal meat. So I don't think that, but again, it's the kind of promise. But like our, according to our calculations and plans, like we will be below the price parity, and it will not be required. It will not be required, like to make a hybrid product.
So you think consumer perception is the key problem at the moment, and that perception is created by too much attention put on alternative proteins as an alternative that begins to frighten the consumer into thinking that they're being kind of state controlled in some way.
Yeah, kind of, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a bit of talk of that at the conference, wasn't there, about kind of using the term alternative proteins and perhaps replacing it with a different term that is more, like rather than alternative kind of collaborative protein or that sort of terminology. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that these, disputations or discussions about the terminology is for the conferences. It's not for the market. It's not
No.
for the consumers. People don't care.
Yeah,
Like people at
people.
the end of the day, like they will see the price, quality, the benefits. They, like each of us is making cost benefit analysis in each second of our lives. So that's what the consumers will do as well.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking that, it will not be, like I think that, there is a still, kind of a big tendency on the state level, like to how to say that, to formulate the alternative, let's say, food and feed, so that it would be more acceptable for the people. But I think that the biggest problem now is that people do not have a choice. You know, they are, they have a, they have a, at least for the cultivated meat, you know, for the plant meat, you know, like they tested it, you know, like it was not, it was, you know, like, it was not so much accepted, you know, according to the, you know, it was not accepted according to the, to the promises or expectations, because people simply decided, you know, what's good or what is bad for
Yeah.
them.
I mean, I don't think consumers tend to change behavior based on what is kind of morally good or bad. It's usually what makes sense in their pocket, what sort of tastes
Yeah,
nice,
exactly.
what's, you know, that kind of thing. What is kind of, and what is culturally perhaps right? If their friends are doing it, then they're more likely to do it. If a celebrity does it, they're more likely to do it. So it's all that as well, isn't it?
I think that it really depends on the cost benefit analysis of each person and motivation of each person. Somebody wants to be, you know, like, innovative. Somebody wants to be part of the crowd. Somebody wants to be as conservative as possible, because, you know, there are thousands of generation or hundreds of generations before in life which were doing something. So why should I do something else? You know, let's leave it on the people. You know, like, let's not create some governmental programs or anything like that. You know, let's leave it on the market.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Roman, for coming on, and I look forward to seeing your product on the market, and perhaps we'll talk again when it's available, and we can you know, we can show the packets, and we perhaps we can have some dogs eating it and seeing what their reactions are or something.
Okay, thank you very much for the invitation. It was a real pleasure. Thank
Okay.
you.
Lovely to talk to you. Thank you.